But remember why Gideon was here. Why Gideon was in this situation. Why he was viewing this camp. Because God had sent him there to be strengthened. To have his faith bolstered. When Gideon came, behold, a man was relating a dream to his friend. The reason I say that God was going to prove to Gideon that he was in complete control of every detail in this universe is that because as Gideon walks up, and probably in the shadows so they can't see him, what happens? A man is relating a dream to his friend. What a coincidence! How did Gideon happen upon that with such luck? You got two things going on here. God supplied a dream, and I can assure you that it was no accident that the man had the dream, and it was no accident that he was relating it to his friend at the time Gideon walks up. Because God has a purpose here in Gideon, and he wants him his faith to be strengthened. He wants his arm to be strengthened so that he can do what God has called him to do. Behold, I had a dream. A loaf of barley bread was tumbling into the camp of Midian, and it came to the tent and struck it so that it fell and turned it upside down so that the tent lay flat. Well, that's an interesting dream. How many of you have ever had a dream of a big loaf of bread come rolling down and smashing a house? I'm thinking this probably, that's probably why the guy remembered the dream, because this is kind of bizarre. His friend replied, "This is nothing less than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has given Midian and all of the camp into his hands." Why would he draw that conclusion? Where did he come up with that interpretation? Well, my personal opinion is that God is in control of every detail, of every aspect of this universe, and that's why he came up with that interpretation, because it was correct and God gave it to him. But there are some other things involved here. Why a loaf of barley? Barley was generally eaten by the poor, by those who couldn't afford anything better. And so that represented Israel, because Midian had so suppressed them that they were destitute. Midian didn't want the barley. They came and got the wheat and left the barley for the poor Israelites. And so they were eating that nasty barley cake that normally you would feed to the animals. And so there's this big cake and it comes rolling down the mountain and it hits the tent. The tent. What tent? Probably the tent where the officers or the generals or whoever was leading the army. The tent. Where the big shots were. And it turns the tent upside down. It destroys it. The tent was probably representative of two things. One, their leadership. And two, they were a nomadic tribe and they moved around. That was their castle. That was their house. And so you got this barley cake destroys that which they considered to be one of the most prized possessions of their existence, and that was their tent, that was their abode, that was, you know, our houses and our cars define who we are in some cases, right? Hopefully not, but in some people's cases it does. In their culture, their tent defined who they were, and so we see that being destroyed by a barley cake. And so if you were Gideon and you heard the dream and you heard the interpretation of the dream, what conclusion could you come to other than God was going to do what he said he was going to do? Because I've just seen God provide three or four coincidences which weren't coincidences at all, because God is in control and he's providing me with the opportunity to understand that he is in control and that I can trust him and I can put my faith in him. When Gideon heard the account of the dream and its interpretation, he bowed in worship. That ought to be our response every time we come to the realization that God is in control and that God is for us. You know, every day we wake up and we think about our own deliverance, our own salvation, our own redemption. That ought to cause us to worship. Because we know that it is not of our own doing, but it is all is wholly and solely of God. He returned to the camp of Israel and said, "Arise, for the Lord has given the camp of Midian into our hands." It's still dark. And if we go back, it said it was the middle watch, so it was somewhere between probably 10 and midnight in the middle of the night. He gets back. He gets his 300 men up. He says, "This is God's thing. We're going to go do it, and we're going to go do it right now." He divided the men into three companies, and he put trumpets and empty pitchers, which were probably part of the provisions that they took from the other men, put pitchers in their hand, in the hands of all of them, with torches inside the pitchers. Now, it doesn't tell us whose idea this was. You know, and obviously you can see where I'm going here. I mean, obviously Gideon didn't come up with this on his own. If we believe that God is in control of everything, we know that, you know, either God spoke directly to Gideon and said, "This is what you're going to do," or God gave Gideon that vision of how we're going to do this. I don't know how that transpired. But anyway, so he sets it up, and each man gets a trumpet. Each man gets a pitcher with a torch in it. And the pitcher, obviously, is to conceal the light until they get to the edge of the camp. And he said to them, "Look at me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. When I and all who are with me blow the trumpet, then you also blow the trumpet all around the camp and say, 'For the Lord and for Gideon.'" So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just posted the watch, and they blew the trumpets and smashed the pitchers which were in their hands. And the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers, and they held the torches in their left hand and the trumpet in their right hand for blowing, and cried, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Each stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran, crying out as they fled. When they blew 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against another, even throughout the whole army, and the army fled as far as Beth Shittah toward Zerah, as far as the edge of Abel Meholah by Tabith. Probably butchered all those names, but that's okay. We're probably not going to remember them after today anyway. The point is, what? 300 men standing around the outskirts of this camp of 135,000 men. They have horns. They have pitchers that are covering torches. And on one signal, the trumpets are blown, the pitchers are smashed, which probably makes a good bit of noise, and suddenly the perimeter of the camp is illuminated. I always think of those TV shows or those movies, you know, where they're interrogating somebody and they're sitting there in the dark, you know, and all of a sudden they turn these lights on, you know, and just blinds them, and they're just shocked. And I get the impression that that's kind of what's going on here. And realize that, you know, these guys are, it's in the middle of the night. They're encamped. They have no clue that something's about to happen, and something suddenly is happening. They're deep in sleep. They wake up and they see and they hear, and everything is in disarray. They're running around trying to find their swords. They're trying to figure out what's going on. They're seeing people run by them. And then God adds a level of chaos to the whole situation, and they start killing each other. They just go nuts. It's amazing how God can do that. He can just turn a calm, collected, restful night into total bedlam. And that's what he did. With 300 men blowing horns, smashing pots, and waving torches. And basically, what does it say? It said they stood at the perimeter of the camp and they watched it all happen. This is God's battle. We just have to do what He's asked us to do. We have to prepare ourselves, make ourselves ready, and then watch God do what God does best. And that's deliver. And so these guys are running around, they're killing each other, and they finally figure out something's not right here. And well, obviously they figured that out right away, but they begin to run, to flee and escape. Then the men of Israel summoned from Naphtali and Asher and Manasseh, and they pursued Midian. All those guys that we got that got sent home, we're calling them back. They actually get to be a part of this now. So now as we got the army in flight and they're headed back to wherever they came from, about a tenth of what they came as. And so Gideon summons all the men of Israel. And then he also sent a messenger throughout all the hill country of Ephraim, saying, "Come down against Midian and take the waters before them as far as Beth Bara and the Jordan." So all the men of Ephraim were summoned, and they took the waters as far as Beth Bara and the Jordan and captured the two leaders of Midian, Oreb and Zeb. And they killed Oreb at the rock of Oreb, and they killed Zeb at the winepress of Zeb. While they pursued Midian, and they brought the heads of Oreb and Zeb to Gideon from across the Jordan. So he gets everybody involved, Gideon does. We no longer have, you know, the army confined into a little area where we can deal with them. They're in flight, they're headed back home. And so he calls the men, and you know, and I've never experienced war. I've never been in the army or the armed forces. I've never been in a battle situation. But I can imagine if I were retreating, you know, you're gonna look for every crack and crevice and cranny and cave that you can hide in to make sure that you don't get found. And so you know, they're scouring the land looking for these guys. And the main band is obviously all together, and they're moving, and they're on their camels, and they're headed out. But there's going to be stragglers. And it tells us later that they had their herds and their flocks with them. So they're moving kind of slow. But, you know, he calls the men of Israel to come and help mop up. And then he calls Ephraim, which is another tribe. It's one of the sons of Joseph. And they settled on the Transjordan. And what he wants them to do is, as these guys come across the waters, in other words, the tributaries of the Jordan River, because then they'll be exposed, he wants the men of Ephraim to deal with those guys as they're going across. So he gets everybody involved. And we're out of time this morning, so we're going to stop here. And my understanding is that Don is going to be having some surgery this summer. And we need to be praying for that. And probably he'll want me to fill the pulpit for at least a couple of Sundays. So come July, we're going to pick this story back up and try to finish it. But what we want to leave here this morning with is the two words, faith and grace. We're told in Hebrews that these men had faith. And because they had faith, God did great things with them and through them. And we see here in the life of Gideon what God was able to accomplish when Gideon was willing to be faithful, or to have faith in God, to put his confidence in God. But we also see that God was gracious enough to give Gideon the faith that he needed. He provided him with those things that would make his faith able to motivate him to do that. Because immediately following the situation where he heard about the dream, what did he do? It motivated him to action. I know God is doing this. I am fully, totally confident in God at this point. And so, what does that have to do with us today here in the 21st century? You know, God's not calling us to blow horns and smash pitchers and wave torches. Or is he? You know, what has God called us to do? You know, we're all going to leave here this morning and we're all going to go to separate places. And yet, there's something that God has called you to do. And if you don't know what it is, then put a fleece out so that God can show you what you need to be doing. He's got a purpose. He's got a mission for every one of us who are His children. We need to find out what that is. We need to find out what our gifts are and begin to exercise them. There are things He's called us to do. Let's find out what they are. But then maybe we don't have the courage. Maybe we don't have the strength, the faith. Because we're so little and the task is so big. If you don't have the faith to believe that God can do what He's called you to do, then ask Him for faith. Ask Him for those situations and circumstances in your life that will confirm that yes, indeed, God is able. That we can gain the confidence to trust that God will do what God said. And remember, this isn't our battle. What did Jesus say? The gates of hell will not prevail against the kingdom. I will build my church. This is God's battle. We're only called to be a part of it and to do what God has called us to do. So I challenge you this morning with those things. Find out what God wants you to do. And then ask God for the faith to do it, the strength to do it. Bless you this week. I pray that you will go in faith.